Okay, we're going to call the committee to order. We have the minutes of the April 12th, 2005, and the January 25th, 2006 minutes in front of us. Representative Atkins, having thoroughly read them, would you like to move approval? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. We have House File 1375 in front of us. Actually, we don't. There was the chair laid it over last session, so I will bring it back on the table in front of us. Representative Severson, you have an amendment you'd like to start with.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Yes, I have Amendment H1357DE7 as the amendment, and I will have one oral amendment to that amendment.
Okay, you want to make the amendment to the amendment first, and then we'll vote on...
The amendment to the amendment is on line 1.5, strike after claim, period, prior to pursuing any arbitration or legal equitable proceeding which includes an allegation of breach of any of the warranties in this section, and strike that to the comma. And that is replaced with...
So hold on, just so members see, on line 1.5, starting with the word prior, we're striking everything on the rest of that line, all of line 1.6, and on line 1.7, the words this section.
That's correct.
Now, okay, give me the replacement language. And
the replacement language is following notice under section 3.6.
Mr. Chair, could you get us on the right page in the right...
Okay, we are on the DE7 amendment. It says H1375DE7. Members find that in their packets? Okay, so we struck language on those lines 1.5 through 1.7 as indicated, and now we're putting the new language in. So please read it slowly enough so people can get it down.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The replacement language is as follows. Following notice under section 327A.03, comma.
Where does that go, Mr. Chair?
Representative Goodwin, that's going to go on line 1.5 after the word claim and then the period. So it's replacing the language that was deleted.
So, Mr. Chair, if you'd like, I can read that.
Please proceed.
On 1.5, subdivision 4, condition to bring in claim, following notice under section 325, 327A.03, the vendee must allow an inspection and opportunity to repair the known loss or damage. The inspection must be performed and any offer to repair must be made in writing to the vendee within 30 days of the vendor's receipt of the written notice required, and the rest continues.
Okay. Can we have someone get that on paper and get it to a copier? Because that's too long to do as an oral amendment, at least for this chair. Yes?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I was just reading through the bill with it in place, the amendment that I had said previously stated.
Okay, so what is the new language? Is the new language just stop at 327A.03? So it's just about seven words or so?
Yeah.
That's correct. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so let me summarize for members on page 1.5, the new language will read following notice under section 327A.03 and a comma. Then it goes right into the old language that was there on line 1.7, the vendee. Is everybody clear on that? Representative Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I've had some conversations with the builders about this, and I think also what they said they would do here would be to take out the conditions bringing a claim language as well under 1.5. because what we're trying to do, I understand, what they are trying to do is to make sure that the builder responds to the homeowners when they've complained about faulty construction under their warranty, and because there's already a requirement that the homeowner give a notice to the vendor when there's something wrong with the house. So what we're trying to do is make sure that the builder responds, because the majority of times most of the complaints that are received from our state are because there isn't one. So what I'm saying here is that I would like to amend his amendment to eliminate condition to bringing a claim as well on line 0.15.
Okay, Representative Stevenson, without getting into a whole debate before we pass your amendment, is that something that
I'll take
that do right
friendly
now?
Amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so on line 1.5, delete the words "condition to bringing claim." Is that correct? Okay. Everybody understand where we're at? Mr. Fender.
Mr. Chair, I have a heading, some other heading for that subdivision.
Okay.
For that subdivision, so we should have some substantive one. If you want to instruct it.
Would you have some suggestion?
I would.
let's see what the writer of the statute says.
Okay.
Mr. Fender.
Mr. Chair and members, I'd say... how about response from vendor to notice of claim?
Oh, good.
Response from vendor to notice of claim?
To notice of claim.
Representative Stevenson? Is that agreeable to you? Do you?
I have no problem with that, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Stevenson will incorporate the prior named verbal oral amendments to his amendment, and we'll now take up the DE-7 amendment and vote on that to get it in the shape the author likes. Got that? Representative Rivina, can you repeat that?
Mr. Chair, I was just sort of here, you know, rambling in my own mind, which is often I
That's
do.
Scary.
And I'm just wondering if when we have some DFL bills in front of the committee and your 24-hour rules and everything else, will we be given this kind of latitude also to?
You know, the 24-hour rule is in place, but I think this is, people would agree this is non-controversial, and it's not necessarily a huge substance change to this. So I will give all authors this latitude.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If there's big substantive changes, we try to go by the 24-hour rule since we got 26 members on the committee. Just try to be respectful of each other. So to the DE-7 amendment, all in favor of adopting the DE-7, say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. Representative Stevenson, your amended bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We got very short into this bill last time, and it became, we kind of hit a timeline, became obviously it was not going to be resolved. We've met with the parties of interest on this particular bill, and I think you can see that we've made some significant compromise. It's gone from a 9-page bill here that I have in my hand down to less than a 1-page bill. And I think it really brings forth the spirit of the argument here for this particular provision, and that is that we want to simplify this process. We want to get the builder and the owner together in an exclusionary or a covered arena for 30 days to say, if you can work these things out, then this won't go into a litigated process. We're not taking away the rights of either the owner or the vendor. We are saying that this is a period in which they have an opportunity to negotiate. And if that doesn't work, then they go on with their litigatory rights from there on. So this is really an attempt to say, let's put some reasonableness into the process of trying to get a house fixed. And I believe this is the best way to do that. This process establishes a process for a homeowner and the builder to resolve a conflict arising out of allegations of construction defaults. Current law states that a homeowner must provide written notice of alleged defects to the builder. It allows a builder or an established third party reasonable access to the dwelling for inspection to determine the nature, and extent of the problem and possible options for repair. It mandates the builder must respond to the homeowner's complaint and offer to repair or deny the claim defect within 30 days of receiving the homeowner's complaint. The homeowner's participation in the mandatory dispute resolution process is given deference to all applicable statutes of limitations for 180 days, or at least until the builder gives notice, written notice, to the homeowner that the claim will be repaired or rejected. This process gives the homeowner the opportunity to proceed with a lawsuit if the builder declines to proceed with the inspection or rejects the claim. And most importantly, this mandatory process compels each party to deal directly with one another without jeopardizing the homeowner's legal claims or the right to pursue claims in court. And, Mr. Chair, I think it's pretty straightforward. What we're saying is we want to give them 30 days to negotiate. If the builder has given the homeowner the notice within that 30 days, there's an additional 6 months have the problem resolved. And during that time, that is told. So if there's a one-year warranty and it happens at 11 months and 6 days, when the process is over, then the remaining time on that warranty is tagged down to the end of the toll. And, Mr. Chair, I would stand for any questions that we might have.
Question from members. Representative Mueller, yes, could you pull your microphone forward, please?
Sorry, Mr. I'm trying to... It's quite a change, obviously, from last year. It's got to be a lot better. I just want... And this would sound... I haven't had a chance to really analyze this or talk to other attorneys that do this a lot. It sounds that in general it would be okay. My problem is where there might, and I haven't figured this out yet, whether this gets at the emergency situation. I don't think it does.
Representative Everson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mulery. In an emergency situation, you're speaking to something that needs to be taken care of immediately, that the roof is falling in. The roof is falling in on the house or something similar to that.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. That's what I'm... Or some... Whether the roof is falling in, yeah, if it's something that can be damaged worse or they can't live in the house, I'm not sure. Does this give the vendor 180 days to... that nothing can be done by the homeowner in the meantime? I haven't analyzed how this fits in. I just want to make sure that it doesn't do that, or that's not your intent. In other words, if this is just saying that the vendor has this long to do it in a normal situation, I know I'm not getting at that. I'm trying to worry about the emergency situation.
Representative Severson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Mueller, this does not affect that proposal. This is merely for those items that have brought up as a defect in workmanship or in the follow-on provisions for law for the warranty for electrical and heating under the 2-year or the 10-year for foundational. That's what this addresses.
Other members? Or other questions of members?
Mr. I have a minute.
None. Representative Goodwin, you have an amendment you want to move? There are three here. Are those all yours?
Yeah.
You want to
Sorry.
Pick one and let which one you want to do first.
Okay, I'd like to do H1375A1.
Representative Goodwin moves the A1 amendment. Representative Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also had handed out a copy of this Westlaw decision, Supreme Court of Minnesota decision on the Camacho case. What happened recently, in fact, November 23rd, is that the Supreme Court ruled that this is what's happening. In a lot of cases, builders are dissolving under their current name when they're having claims brought against them, and they're reopening under a different name. And some have, according to the lawyers that represent homeowners, they are sometimes changing their name 4 and 5 times to get out of complying with the 10-year warranty provision and having to repair the homes that have faulty construction. So there was a case that was brought to the Supreme, all the way to the Minnesota Supreme Court, because this happened to a couple in Bandit Heights, and they sued the builder and the builder's insurer to try to get their home repaired, which had $200,000 worth of moisture intrusion damage to it. And what the court decided was that, unfortunately, the Minnesota legislature needs to clarify law, because right now the home warranty statute is being superseded by the business dissolution statute, which is 502, I believe, chapter 502, and this is 527, which is the home warranty statute. So in other words, to make a long story short, because of the Supreme Court decision, because builders are allowed to dissolve and reopen under a different name, people's home warranties are useless. Basically useless. The most they would have would be a 2-year warranty, and then only if they found out that the business owner, the builder, was dissolving in that 2 years, they found out and they made a claim. So if their house started leaking all over, decaying within a few months after the builder's 2-year period where he has to make good, or the, any business has to make good any debts they have, it would basically, he'd be, and him as an insurer would be absolved of having any kind of responsibility for that home warranty. So now, the court decision, as you can see, there's a few pages back here, in a couple of places where I've starred, it says, it is the province of the legislature, not this court, to provide a remedy to those homeowners who may be foreclosed from bringing an action under their home warranty. And then again, on the next page, it says, any remedy giving homeowners access to dissolved corporations' insurance must come from the legislature. So unless we change the law, home warranties in Minnesota, after the Supreme Court decision, are basically useless. So what my amendment here is trying to do is to say that the statutory warranty provided under Section 327A is not affected by a dissolution of the builders. So if he has a voluntary dissolution and changes, goes out of business to change his name and become somebody else and avoid his warranties, he's still going to be responsible for those warranties he had under his former business name. That's what this is trying to do. So I hope you can see the seriousness of this situation, because right now people are buying in a lot of your districts, not in mine because we don't have $500,000 homes in my district, but a $500,000 to $5 million homes. They're moldy, or they're full of water, or their roof falls in, or whatever, and suddenly their home warranty does them absolutely no good. So this is really important that we fix this.
Okay. We'll go to Representative Severson. First, I just want to acknowledge I should have, before we took up the amendments, I should have, there's a few testifiers that want to testify to the bill. So why don't we'll deal with this amendment now since we're already are, but then we got to go take some more testimony. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Goodwin. And I understand the gravity of this particular ruling by the Supreme Court, and what this has some clouds on the horizon for some of our warranty issues. However, this is a separate issue, and I would, as I see this is a delete all amendment, which would basically gut the bill that I'm trying to get forward here and put a different spin on it. And I would encourage Representative Goodwin to work with us on a separate issue, on a separate bill that I think would be appropriate for this. This is a separate issue, and I would ask Ms. Perry Weaver to speak to that.
Just for clarification real quick, it's not deleting everything that we just adopted in your amendments. It's amending the delete all amendment.
Great.
So you understand that, Representative Severson. Ms. Perry Weaver, please introduce yourself for the record.
Members of the committee, my name is Pam Perry Weaver. I'm the Executive Vice President of the Builders Association of Minnesota. We represent the residential construction industry of Minnesota. We represent over 4,500 builders throughout the state. I appreciate Representative Goodwin bringing this issue forward because we were very concerned about the Minnesota Supreme Court's decision on the Camacho case. We do not support the fact that a business a builder can go out of business in order to avoid their warranty obligations. I think we would strongly discourage builders to do that. We don't think that's good for business. However, that case had two components to it. One of them was this issue of builders going out of business and avoiding their warranty obligation. But the second issue in that case dealt with insurance. It also said that a consumer can't go to the builder's insurance in order to get remedy when that builder goes out of business. So I would like to work with Representative Goodwin and members of the committee to fix the circumstances that the Camacho case put forward, but also include a couple of different items that are a bit broader than just corporate dissolution issues. I think we also need to address the issue of insurance companies. The fact that a builder purchases a general liability insurance policy and that's an asset to his or her company, that should be considered in this circumstance. The fact that a builder can go back in business after they dissolve in any time they want to, I think is a problem that also needs to be addressed. If a builder's going out of business to avoid their warranty obligation, there should be some time barred for them in order to get another license. So I think that there are other issues we'd like to address with Representative Goodwin and with this committee on this specific Camacho decision, and we hope we have an opportunity to do that because we would like to create a solution for both the builders and the homeowners.
I've got Representative Davids and Representative Mullery, and then we will come back to you. Representative Davids.
Can we even do what Representative Goodwin's trying to do here? I mean, if a business is dissolved, can we come to the table, but you're not really dissolved? Could that work?
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, there are a couple of other things in the corporation statutes that also allow claims against corporations that have dissolved. I mean, the issue is going to be whether the corporation has any assets at the point after it's dissolved, but the insurance coverage may well be one of those assets.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Pender, if the corporation's dissolved, it's gone, the insurance has been canceled, what are we giving people false hope here that we're trying to do something, but we're really not?
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, the attempt here is to make the warranties, make the warranty statutes trump the corporate dissolution statutes, basically by saying here, as it does in the bill, that the warranties aren't affected by a dissolution under the chapter. In other words, that's a debt that's an obligation or debt of the corporation that remains.
That remains, Mr. Pender, how, and there's no assets. Does it really matter? I'm not sure the insurance.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wilkin, it's the issue is whether the insurance coverage itself is an asset.
Representative Atkins, so you had a question at that point?
Well, that's the very point I desired to make, which is that by virtue of this, the way that I read it is that would preserve. And if you read it hand-in-hand with the Camacho decision, by preserving the statutory warranty claim, which otherwise would have been dissolved as a result of the dissolution of the corporation, you then preserve that claim, and thereby, if you look at page 6, it appears, of the decision, you would preserve the ability to present an insurance claim. That, as I understand it, and can you tell I'm trying to make a legislative record here? That, as I understand it, would make the insurance coverage continue to be available to the homeowner. The company may well be gone, but by virtue of the amendment, you would continue to have then a claim against the insurance company for the coverage. That is how I would understand it. I would hope that would be how this committee would understand it.
Okay, Representative Mullery.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that was the point I was also going to make. Having worked in both corporate law and insurance law and construction defects, and I'm just wondering, have we had an analysis for sure that this covers the entire situation? I can think that there's some other things that I've seen. I won't get whether I happen to ever have a client that might have tried something, but or at least came to me as to be a client. To when they have this, then they start up again. And Minneapolis had something that we should look at, which is that it prevents a situation where you've got a builder that does this, goes out of business with his corporation, comes back under his wife's name or his kid's name.
Mm-hmm.
He runs the entire thing. At least most of the contractors I know sure don't want that going on, but there are a few bad apples out there that are doing that, and I think we want to also get at that, and I don't think this even tries to get at that. So I'm just wondering, I think that's probably too fast for Mr. Pender to come up with all of, he usually can come up with things, but I think this is, maybe this is something, does this go directly to the floor, or?
No, Representative Mullery, this goes to civil law, too, and we're kind of treading on some of their territory, although there's definitely commerce stuff here, too, so.
It might we'll be something that, Representative Severson, would you be willing to, I'm concerned about getting at this whole situation, and I work with, if I don't care which of us takes the lead, I think Representative Goodwin seems to be the lead on this area, but working also with that problem of where you've got the same person running the corporation, they dissolve the corporation because they've done a lot of bad acts, they set up their wife as a, or it can be vice versa or whatever. Nowadays there's a lot of women that are actually, I know for a fact, running the corporations and know a lot more than their husbands about. But get at that situation where there's really fraud going on and things like that. And I think I don't want to hold up something here, but I think we should take care of this problem, and as it goes on, we could work on that too. I support what Representative Goodwin, but I think we need to get at that situation.
Representative Severson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mullery. I agree there is a problem here, and I think, you know, when we went through this process last year, we saw that the thing quickly snowballed into something that we had not initially created. And that's kind of what I see happening here again, is there, what we're trying to establish in this particular bill is just a sanctuary for the homeowner and for the builder. And it's a 30-day sanctuary. And I know that this other issue needs to be addressed, but I would prefer that would be addressed through separate legislation so that we could do it proper justice. And so I would hope that the committee would see fit just to move this simple piece of legislation on as it sits, and then in the future to pick up that very issue and say, hey, this is a problem in our structure code or in the building process, and we need to address that with specific legislation. That would be my move, Mr. Chair.
Got Representative Vanderveer, then Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just agree with Representative Davids that this amendment probably would offer a false hope, but I think it's gets to the point that I think the whole warranty program offers kind of a false hope to people in Minnesota. But I do think that, you know, as Representative Severson said, we should move this along, his piece of legislation along, but I think this committee really needs to look at the home warranty program and what's backing it and what backs the claims so that it actually has some value to people.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, along the same lines, I think, you know, Representative Goodwin has been a real bulldog on this whole issue, and she's hit upon a very important issue in light of this lawsuit, but you know, I'm thinking, and I hate to go back to workers' comp on an issue like this, but, you know, look what happens when you try to get somebody that had a back injury or something with an old insurance company, and then they get another back injury with a new insurance company, and the insurance companies are fighting. And I don't know if this language wouldn't kind of create the same thing between something. But what I want to know is, I think everybody at this table, including the author of this bill, agree that this is a serious problem in light of that court decision, and that you as the chair would allow Representative Goodwin, to, when she comes up with some other language maybe, that will ensure that these warranties aren't just nothing but a useless piece of paper, that you'll give her a hearing, and because I think the majority of the members on both sides of the aisle agree that this is a serious problem. So if that would be your recommendation, Mr. Chair, and you'd agree to that, I think Representative Goodwin would be happy to try to fix up her language and what she's trying to do here, and then we could have another bill on that.
Well, at this point, we've got a number of bills on our slate, and we don't have a lot of committee times. What I'd say is, if the author and Representative Goodwin, Representative Murray, and others who are interested in this issue can work on some of these issues between now and civil law, we're not going to have a lot of time. It's going to be a short session, so it might be better to utilize the vehicles that we have already and see if you can come to some kind of agreement, and then if not, you know, we might be able to address it, you know, should time permit, later. That's what my concern is. It's just the time and session. Representative Goodwin?
I understand that, Mr. Chair, and I do agree with you, which is why I would like to get this language into this this current bill, and then work on the changes that we need to make to it. But I'm telling you, I am not running again, so this is not about some future election for me. If we don't do this year, people's home warranties will be useless in this state. And I'm going to be the first one out there saying, don't buy a new home. Don't buy a home that is supposed to still be under warranty, because you don't have any protection whatsoever. And this is very important. This is not any political game playing or anything. I'm saying we need to do this. If we don't do this, it's useless for a person to buy a new home in Minnesota. It's useless for a person to buy an existing home that's supposed to have a warranty on it. This is part of the fix. The other part of the fix is to make sure that the insurance industry has to pay the claims when they had insured the builder while that home was being built. We have to make that connection too. If people here are concerned that this doesn't do that, this does say though that warranty is good no matter what. That's what it says. And you're right, Representative Vandeveer, the whole warranty thing needs work on it. But this is something that we absolutely have to do. Otherwise, people's warranties are no good. And if we want to, as the legislature, say, too bad, when the Supreme Court said the legislature needs to do this. The legislature needs to fix this so these warranties are meaningful. Okay, then we got to fix it, because they're not going to do it. And so I would like to offer this amendment, and I'm sorry, I'm getting so emotional about it, but something's got to be done in this area. And they're not people in my district. They're not people in my district. They're people in your districts that are having these problems. They're people that are spending their life savings on a home, and that's their biggest investment, and they're losing it because of shoddy construction. Now, if we don't fix this here in the ledger, it's not going to be fixed. So I feel very strongly about that. I'd be more than happy to work with Representative Severson and Representative Mallory and anybody else on this committee that wants to make sure that the language ultimately says what we wanted to say before it goes to civil law. But I am going to offer this amendment here now, and I'm going to ask for a roll call vote.
That roll call has been requested. Representative Atkins?
To that point, I was going to suggest a dual track. I support the amendment. I voiced that earlier. I don't know if there's enough votes to pass it or not. But in the very least, I'd suggest, and I think it's in the builder's interest as well as the homeowners, in fact, Ms. Perry Weaver said the same thing earlier, that the issue be addressed. And if, and pardon me, Mr. Chair, but I know we're busy, but at the same time, if there's the kind of thing that the builders and the homeowners groups could come together on that fixes that, what the Camacho decision highlighted, that I would hope that we could move that out of here relatively quickly. If both sides are on the same page, it could come through here and get out of here relatively fast. So I'd suggest that we do both. Ideally, pass the amendment as part of this, keep working on it before civil law. If that doesn't happen, let's get the folks together on the last draft up a bill and get it out of here yet this year.
Yep. Well, we'll see what we can do. Representative Goodwin?
One last word. Mr. Chair, I didn't make this amendment up. We had several meetings with building inspectors, homeowner attorneys, Mr. Pender, and homeowners that have had the problem, and they came up with this language, but it was mostly offered by the attorneys that dealt in this Supreme Court case, in this particular Supreme Court case. So it's not something I just came out of the blue with. So I think it's pretty good language to do what it is that we need to do. And that doesn't mean I'm not willing to amend it in ways that'll make it better, but because I am. But I just want to say that I didn't make this up.
Appreciate that, Representative Hollis. And then I'd like to see if there's any testimony from the studio audience. Representative Hollis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Representative Severson. I like his bill. I think we should move it forward in the way that he's got it crafted. I also agree with Representative Goodwin and that she's got a very important issue that needs to be addressed, but Representative Severson's bill is going to take somewhat of a problem and shorten the length of time and how the problem is dealt with. Although I agree with what Representative Goodwin is doing, I think all that's going to do is cause insurance companies to go to war, and the homeowner is going to sit there another 2-3 years waiting to see which insurance company for which builder was or wasn't or is now in business. And we're adding more and more to this, and I don't think it's a place for this committee. I think Representative Goodwin should put this together and craft it in a way so we can also hear from insurance companies. You didn't mention insurance companies in the people you've talked with. This is for civil law. This isn't for us, and I'm going to vote no with respect to what Representative Goodwin, even though she does have a good idea.
Representative Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, and everyone decides on whether or not they think this is appropriate. However, there's something air coming down there right at that point, because this does not get into an issue of insurance companies and insurance coverage between two companies. Representative Goodwin was correct. This just is, and Representative Atkins and I think Mr. Pender all said the same thing, that it's whether the coverage extended. So it's what you're talking about just isn't the issue here.
Okay. Would anybody like to testify to the amendment for or against? Please introduce yourself, and I believe you were on the agenda to testify to the bill, too, so if you'd like to address both the amendment and the bill, too, it would be a good time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Nancy Johnson, and I'm a homeowner in Representative Barb Goodwin's district, and I also work with a large group of homeowners via email who have been reviewing bills for the last, this will be the third year. My comments about the Builders Association bill is we were just reviewing it when we came in. It's substantially better than last year, and our group fought hard against it last year for a lot of reasons. So I'm delighted to see that it's been shortened and simplified, and what we'll be doing is sending it out to our entire email list, which consists of homeowners, builders, engineers, and attorneys, and I'll ask for comments from them, and we can present those at the civil law committee hearing if there are any comments at that time. The amendment that Representative Goodwin has offered to this bill is very important. We have gotten a number of emails from homeowners who have found out that they have no warranty and are sitting with $300,000-$500,000 worth of bills that they're going to have to cover themselves. One homeowner that we talked to indicated that her home would probably cost about $400,000 to do the repairs, and you're looking at, you know, That's a substantial amount of money and all of the assets that you have to take to use to make those repairs. And when everyone builds a house, they assume that they're going to have some sort of warranty. And so I support amending this onto the builder's bill, and I hope that you will vote to do that. Representative Goodwin also has two other amendments here. Our group has been very involved with her in looking at and reviewing these bills, so, but we certainly support the amendment that she has offered, and I do hope that you vote on it because it's costing. One of our attorneys indicated at the meeting 2 weeks ago when we were all discussing this issue that he knows of 10 builders. At that time, he knew of 10 builders that were dissolving, and I think the issue of starting up a new company then under a different name, I think that needs to be addressed. I think there's a lot of issues that need to be addressed, but this takes care of something that needs to be dealt with right now, and that's to make sure that homeowners have a warranty. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Yeah, thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to testify?
Mr. Chair, my name is Nancy Emerson. I'm part of the group that Nancy spoke about. I'm also a resident in Representative Atkins' district. And I won't reiterate what she had to say, but we have been spent, well, this is our third year. We have been at the different meetings. As to the original bill, it's much improved, but I would like to, and I don't know, we're going to send it out, but I don't know the unintended consequences because I'm not a lawyer. And even though it's very simple, it's often those unintended consequences that will do someone in. So we'd like either to have an opportunity to before this committee or the other committee to really go through what it really means in the real world. As far as the amendment, I totally support it. With all due respect, I think that what this original bill is trying to maintain the statutory 10-year warranty between a builder and a homeowner, and I think that Representative Goodwin's bill gels nicely with that. As Nancy said, there's a lot of different issues attached to it, i.e., do we let the builder reincorporate after, 45 days? That probably should be done in a separate bill, and this bill should be passed on its merit because it's dealing with the identical issues. How do we maintain a statutory warranty for 10 years and have the owner the ability to get help in their construction defect problems? I agree with Representative Vandermeer, this whole statutory warranty issue. There's probably, in our little tiny group, probably 10 little subdivisions where we can go and see where we need different and improved things so that it comes together as a whole. But I don't think we have time to wait for this dissolution. We call it the dissolution amendment to pass. I think it coincides nicely with the original bill because it deals with those issues. And then the other sub-issues attached to it can be done with another bill or modified if I just cut the new bill. Thank you.
Any further testimony? Please introduce yourself.
Yeah, good day. My name is Jack Rosbach, and I work for a company called Air Tamarack, and we do the actual investigations on homes that have what we call ourselves a mold forensic company with water penetration issues. And we do about 300 homes a year, and we've been doing that for quite a number of years now. So we literally see getting up towards the order of 1,000 homes and the damage to them. For those homes that have significant damage, the average rebuild cost is $160,000. Normally how the process takes place is we do an initial survey of the house, which takes from 4 to 8 hours just to determine if they have a problem. And from then on, there's usually a legal process that takes place, and this is non-destructive testing is the first part, and the second part is destructive testing where we start cutting into the walls of the house. And we can have up to 20 legal representatives and 20 technical people that are witnessing that process as we go through it. So there are already a huge number of insurance companies involved, et cetera. The
time that it takes for the family, and that's the most difficult part for me is understanding what the family has to go through for them to get the money to rebuild the house can be in the 3 to 5 year range with a lot of legal maneuvering going on, a very expensive legal process. To lose that warranty, the 10-year warranty, it would be catastrophic to many of these families. They simply cannot afford to rebuild their houses on their own. And often these are their dream homes where they want to raise their families or retire in. So the language to preserve the and I participated in the discussions, the language to preserve the warranty is absolutely essential because it's the only solution for these families and their homes. Most of these investigations take place in the suburbs where the new homes have been built in the last 10 to 12 years. I actually live in the city, and so we do very little work in the city in older homes. I have no opposition to the bill itself, the contractor being able to evaluate and fix it, except that I'm not sure that the competency is there for the contractor to understand these microbial processes that take place, the mold growth and the eating of the organic materials in the house and the numerous ways in which water and has to be moved in and out and around the house to make it stable. And so that's my one question on the bill is how do we get that technical expert in that process to understand what is going on with the building? And that's pretty much my testimony. Does anybody have
any questions? Thank you very much. Could you stay here?
Maybe I'll ask about Joel.
Okay. Okay, you can go. Welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Trial Lawyers Association. And we, too, have followed this bill for a number of sessions. I wish that my Atkins diet has worked as well as this one. I was prepared for the 9-page bill today and ended up with the 2-paragraph bill. And I don't necessarily know that we have opposition to the delete everything amendment. I'll address that first before the Goodwin Amendment. But I think we just need to know that the requirement in 327A.03 requires the homeowner to put the builder on notice within 6 months of a known defect. Whether you don't get 2 years to tell them about it, you don't get 10 years to tell them about it. What we're talking about in 327A.03 is 6 months from the day you know or a reasonable person should know that there's a defect in their house. And that is a heavily litigated point on construction defect cases, is when did the homeowner know of the issue? I would say that there is nothing right now that precludes, and in fact, I believe in almost every single instance where a homeowner has a defect issue, the first phone call they make is to their builder. There is nothing that precludes them right now from inspecting the property and repairing defective workmanship. In that instance, I would say that the language in front of you in the Delete Everything Amendment is superfluous. It's not needed. They're doing that part of it right now. That is going on. Now, what happens if this language passes, and this is a concern that I have, it not only allows the inspection, it allows on lines 1.7, it allows and requires the opportunity to repair. That could become a condition precedent for a homeowner bringing a case. If I make the offer to repair and you deny it, that is going to potentially subject that issue, the denial of that offer to fix. I didn't allow you the opportunity to repair. And that can serve as a denial of your claim if you do file one, because the builder now has, you must allow an inspection and the opportunity to repair. That is the language on line 1.7. And if you do not allow that opportunity to repair, although you may say you just simply rejected the claim, you may be faced with all or nothing, and you may be forced into accepting a substandard repair or a repair that you don't necessarily agree with, or run the risk of losing your case at summary judgment because you don't provide the opportunity to repair. And I think that that is language that they don't necessarily intend, but is certainly a potential result from the language, and I guarantee you it will be litigated. As to the Camacho case which I brought with me, and Representative Goodwin's amendment, we have long had trouble with this particular issue, not just in homeowner cases, but in other areas of law in Minnesota. Minnesota is one of the few states that does not recognize a direct cause of action by an injured party against the insurance company. And that is a significant problem. 46 states allow a direct cause of action against an insurance carrier. And I think that you could improve this language of Representative Goodwin's by allowing not just the case against the home builder, but allowing the cause of action against the surviving insurance company. All of these policies, they are assets of the company. They are sold on an annual basis to cover anything you build during that period of time. It is not an issue of having to go back and rewrite premiums. They've already collected the premium, and they're simply avoiding, by dissolution, the ability or the responsibility of paying for a claim. And the last paragraph in Representative Goodwin's amendment makes the effective date retroactive. I want you to know that this legislature has, in many instances, approved retroactive legislation. Probably the most current and recent example that we've had was a case for Marvin Windows, where the legislature retroactively approved a cause of action for Marvin Windows against PPG. It resulted in about $100 million settlement to PPG. The retroactivity provision of the Goodwin Amendment, and I just saw it here like everyone else today, makes sense because you're not exposing a carrier to liability that they haven't already collected the premium for. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to work with the builders. They've been very gracious and open about their proposals as this moves through the process. I just don't think that we're quite there yet. Be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Mullery.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, and thank you. Mr. Carlson, you brought up a point I had just caught when the other last testifier was just about nearing the end of his, is that while I had tried to get through this and think of things when the E7 came out, I see a huge problem with it now where it's the opportunity to repair means that the homeowner who may have had their house destroyed by a contractor, this isn't, as I think this applies to not just original contractors, but any work on the house. And so if I've got a, well, not realistic, but if I have a $1 million house and I ask a contractor to come out and do something, a small item, and they ruin that part of the house completely, I can't think of any other area of law where I have to allow that same person to do the repair. I have my choice of going to somebody else to have the repair on the basis that they've already wrecked something of mine. What am I going to keep? Let them continue to wreck it further? And so I think we would be taking away a big right of homeowners in this situation with the present language. And I don't know if that's the intention of the author or not. I completely agree with the idea of the inspection and making an offer to repair, the idea of that. But if this is held to be that the homeowner has to allow that person to make the repair or attempt to repair, they may be a complete butcher, as I've seen in my practice. There is no way, on some cases that I've handled, that they... In fact, this would be a horrible situation from some cases I know of, particularly in cases I handled, actually representing an insurance company. The builder was totally incompetent, had ruined things, and the last thing we would do would be let them in there to ruin more things, and that's what this language, I think, would do. Is that not correct? And I hope that's not the intent of the author, but it does that, and I think this still isn't quite ready. I'm not saying that, Mr. Chair, I don't know if you realized this, when that this problem exists with this, and if it's just the intent to allow the inspection, I think I certainly agree with that, and I would guess Mr. Carlson would be, and that they can make an offer to repair, but I don't want to take away the homeowner's rights to say, wait a second, that guy's destroyed my home already, I don't want to have him in there wrecking the rest of what I got left. And so, maybe you could comment, that's the way I see it. Would you comment on that? Or?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and members, I think that that's just exactly what the language says on 1.7, that they must allow, it's mandatory, it's a condition precedent to moving forward with any litigation, you must allow them an inspection and an opportunity to repair. If they make the inspection and say this is defective and you want someone else on your property doing the work, this does not, to me, appear to give you that right. I would also, I failed to mention that the language on 1.13 through 1.19, the escape clauses, do not provide for any opportunity if the home builder makes an offer to repair but does not follow through and do it. Where does that leave the homeowner? It doesn't necessarily indicate that you then have waived your or complied with the statute. If they make the offer and they don't follow through, then where is the homeowner? Have they just delayed the 180 days or longer with nothing resolved? What is the remedy for the homeowner? Is it a confession of judgment? What is the homeowner's situation if they don't do the repairs that they agreed to do in their written offer?
Mr. Chairman, I think he's, not only is he agreeing with me that there's a huge problem here, but he's pointing out an additional one that I didn't point out. I think that, we've shortened it from nine pages to two paragraphs, but I don't think it's right yet. It's not, I don't want to take away important rights of homeowners, and right now the language does that. Unfortunately, I'm not saying that that's the intent, but it certainly does that.
Mr. Chairman, could I add one last point?
Please.
Just for the committee's information, you also need to know that all civil actions filed in Minnesota require mandatory arbitration and alternative dispute resolution. That is a mandatory requirement in all cases that are filed in Minnesota. Should a case be commenced, you are going to have a mandatory dispute resolution process imposed by this legislature and the court on anyone that commences litigation in Minnesota.
Here, Representative Gadelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson, I'm not a commercial insurance expert, so I'm trying to get my hands around this, but under the Goodwin Amendment, if there was a situation where a homeowner decided to file a claim, say, 6 months after the contractor went out of business, would the insurance company be obligated to pay under this amendment?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Gazelka, that presupposes a couple things. Number one, that it is covered warranty work, that it's a defect that is covered by the policy. But if you're asking me if they file a claim 6 months after the corporation has officially dissolved, the answer is no. with the Goodwin Amendment, I believe that you would have the right to enforce that warranty, and the builder would have the right to collect on that asset, that insurance policy that they bought for that period of time.
And, Mr. Chair, Representative Gazelle, the reason why I'm asking that question and why I'm not completely familiar with commercial insurance, are they would not, the insurance company would not have collected premium for that additional time frame, or that company was out of business and then would be paying a claim. You know, so that's would be my concern. That's why I think the insurance company should be a player in talking about this with the contractors and the homeowners to make sure we get something that really fits for everyone.
And Mr. Chairman and members, this is certainly something for the Insurance Federation to enlighten you on, but I believe that the general liability policies that they're selling for this particular activity are sold on an annual basis for work performed during that set time period, and that extends out. Physicians, for example, buy insurance that is paid for on a claims made basis. We're covering you for any claim that's made during that calendar year. This particular insurance generally is purchased on a basis of the time period that you're doing the work,
okay,
and not on a claims made basis.
I believe that's correct. If you can get a policy, it's kind of hard to come by right now. Representative Mallory, Representative House, do you have a question?
Oh, I've got lots, but you know, I think I'll ask Mr. Carlson later.
Representative Mallory.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I had written almost the same thing that Mr. Pender came over to me. And Mr. Carlson, maybe you can think of, would this be a, does this solve the problem? Offhand, it seemed to me it might, but I'm not sure if I got it all figured out yet. If we put in opportunity to and then insert the words make an offer to repair, and Mr. Pender had just said opportunity to offer to repair, doesn't matter which of the two
lines. Laurie, could you give us like one reference in this?
Oh, sorry, on line 1.7.
Is this on the DE amendment?
DE7. On 1.7. I'll shorten it to Mr. Pender's language. After the word opportunity to, put in offer to. No, Mr. Yes, you can.
Yes, you can
amend an amendment.
We're on Goodwin's amendment to delete all amendments.
No, we're not on Goodwin.
Yes, we are. We're on, Representative Mallory, we're on the Goodwin amendment, so we can't amend. I don't believe we can amend the DE amendment, but you'd have the opportunity to do that later. No, we have another amendment to the DE7 in front of us. So you're not amending the amendment, but we can get to that eventually.
Mr. Chairman, tonight, since we've got him up there,
yep.
If we did this, when we can procedurally do it, Mr. Carlson, would that take care of the problem?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and members, I think What you're really trying to get at is allowing the parties to begin a discussion with some inspection of the property. And I believe if you just deleted and opportunity to repair, and if you just allow the inspection of the known loss,
that would be.
And then you just follow on 1.8, the inspection must be performed and any offer to repair must be made in writing to the vendee. You just delete that, and that takes care of it all together.
Can we remember that when we can do it?
We'll put that in our memory and move back to the Goodwin Amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any further testimony for or against the Goodwin Amendment? Representative Searson?
Mr. Chair and members, I think you see the classic example of what happened to this bill the last session when we started walking through this thing and we had several tentacles dangling and they subsequently got stepped on. And my concern is that what we're trying to do in the original bill here is to set a sanctuary between the builder and the homeowner. The big picture is set a sanctuary between the builder and the homeowner for 30 days they can sit down and they can negotiate how they want this to proceed. Once it gets outside that 30 days, then all the legal rights that were impugned to those two individuals beforehand remain after the fact. And we're even tolling this to say that it doesn't count on the warranty section. As soon as we start showing warranties and failure of warranties and all the other things in here, we're muddying the waters and we're throwing more strings out to get stepped on. My preference would be get, this is a tool for litigation reform for some of the issues that have, to my estimation, 80% of the problems that we have early on could be taken care of between the homeowner and the vendor. And this gives us that process to do that. And so I would ask the members of the committee to, let's keep it simple if we could, and try and get this kind of principle act through to start with.
Okay, we're going to have to get to a vote here because we're at 2:15. We've got two more amendments. Representative Goodwin, my personal preference is that you take care of this between here and civil law and get everybody in a room and work it out. I think you want to vote, if we keep going with that, I'm going to vote no here, but not because I fully disagree with what you're doing, because I think there's something there. But I would like it a little more hashed out with attorneys in the room and get some agreed language rather than do it in committee, but that's up to you.
Representative Chair, let me offer you two things here. One is that if we don't have this amendment, what Representative Severson is trying to do here is totally immaterial because there really isn't a warranty to try to get the builder to comply with. So if we don't do this, what he's doing is meaningless. Secondly, if we can take a vote on this one now, I still want to do that, and I still want a roll call vote, but I will drop one of my other two amendments in order to save time.
Appreciate that. And, it, you know, I represent Goodwin to your one point that it's immaterial. I think that'd be true probably in the case where a builder is dissolved, but in most of the cases where they haven't, I think there's still need there. So, that being said, the clerk will take the roll.
Atkins.
He's up.
Clark.
Yes.
David.
No.
Fritz?
Yes.
Gazelka?
No.
Goodwin?
Yeah.
Gunther?
No.
Hamilton?
No.
Howson?
No.
Yaros?
All right.
Coles? Liebling?
Yes.
Loeffler?
Yes.
Moe?
Yes.
Mullery? Pepin?
No.
Powell?
No.
Rukavina?
Yes.
Saylor?
Yes.
Sirdich?
Yes.
Severson?
No.
Simpson?
No.
Soderstrom?
No.
Vandeveer?
No.
Wilkin?
No.
Zellers.
No. Boy, we made it. The fight started rolling over. That was yesterday.
So the vote being 11-13, the motion does not prevail. Representative Goodwin, you have another amendment?
Yes, I do. My next amendment is H1375A3. And this amendment would allow under new home warranties
well,
and...
Representative Goodwin, let me figure that out. Is it A3?
A3.
Representative Goodwin moves the A3 amendment. Representative Goodwin.
Thank you. The A3 amendment is... allows a homeowner to, if there's a judgment made against the builder and insurer that the for the prevailing party and the vendee is the prevailing party, then the vendee
can also be awarded cost disbursements and reasonable attorney fees. Now, this differs from what I was trying to do last year, because I said last year that they must award them that. And so I think this is a more reasonable approach and allows the arbitrator or the court to decide whether or not those fees will be awarded. I had a little conversation with Representative House a few minutes ago about how this would affect the builder. And what's happening right now, according to the Builders Association, is that the insurance industry is telling the builders not to repair these homes, just let it go to litigation. And so when that happens, the homeowner is stuck without any help at all. And the homeowner is forced to hire an attorney at that point. And when they do, the judgments that come out of, and when the insurance company has a whole slew of attorneys on the staff and they allow this thing to go on and on and on and on, the homeowner can go 5-6 years. Well, in the meantime, their home is literally rotting out. And the damage is more extensive. But when they get an award, the majority of that award ends up going to attorney fees. An example is in Barb Sikora's district, there's a woman and man that had a $2 million home built. They put every penny they had into it, 5 kids they had, and it was a brick home, it wasn't stucco, and there was not a moisture barrier put up in between the brick and the built rate. So what happened is the house literally rotted, and all 5 of the kids got desperately ill. They were finally, after going through a couple of years with this, awarded $100,000 last year to fix about $500,000 worth of damage. And $70,000 of that had to go to their attorney. So they ended up with $30,000 to repair almost $500,000 worth of damages. So we think it's only fair that the homeowner should at least be able to possibly get the attorney fees. So that's what this does.
Representative,
I would appreciate your vote, and I would ask again for a roll call.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Goodman, what about the vendor? If the vendor wins, he's got costs, he or she or the corporation has costs too.
Representative Goodman.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Davids, yes, I hear that. But we're talking about a company with deep pockets and lots of attorneys versus we're talking about the insurer for the builders here mostly. But if the insurance company finally realizes that they may have to pay the attorney fees if they drag this thing out for 3 or 5 or 7 years and while the homeowner's home is continuing to rot, then they may be a little more quicker to say to the builder, get the damn thing fixed.
Representative Davids.
Representative Goodwin, I've got a lot of home builders in my district that are 1 or 2 people and they do not have deep pockets.
But Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, they must have insurance. They have to have insurance in order to be a registered contractor, licensed contractor. So they have to carry general liability insurance, builders insurance.
Representative Davids, are you aware of any markets that sell the builders that are admitted carriers anymore?
Well, if this goes through, there won't be any.
Admitted or not admitted?
Yeah.
Representative Goodman, that's my concern. Being involved in the business, there, to my knowledge, I don't do a lot in the builders area, but there's no admitted carriers that are offering this coverage. It's all in a surplus lines market and extremely expensive and getting harder to find. So I know your intent is good, and there's a problem there, but it's whether you'll be able to find coverage at all.
Well,
Representative Goodwin.
Representative Wilkin, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, that is interesting because the Townhome Association laws in Minnesota already provide for coverage of attorney fees if there's a complaint by a townhouse association about building defects. So the only thing that's not covered currently that with the possibility of getting attorney fees is personal homes. So otherwise, you know, under our warranty law, we don't say that they can get attorney's fees. But under the Townhome Association law, we do say that they can get attorney fees. So I think how much difference will this make? Well, hopefully, it'll make the difference of the insurance company saying, builder, get that house fixed, because we don't want to pay the attorney fees.
Representative Goodwin, you're talking about the difference, I believe, if I understand this correctly, the difference between the policy held by a townhome association or a condo association, whatever, which is an entirely different class of business than the builders. The risks are very much different, and I have worked in that area, and it's fairly, it's easier to find coverage on an admitted carrier basis for a carrier basis for like a townhome association, but it's very difficult to find coverage for builders.
Mr. Chair and members, it doesn't dissolve the responsibility of the insurance company that does carry this insurance for builders, that does provide the insurance for builders, from having to repair these homes or having to pay for it if they don't do it. And now we're saying, okay, well, builder's insurance is hard to find. Builder's insurance is out there, and they're getting it. It's out there, and they're getting it. But what's happening is the homeowner is getting no protection. And then when they do finally, if they do finally get some kind of a settlement, the majority of it has to go to attorney fees. That is very unfair.
I understand what you mean. I'm just pointing out that there might be an unintended consequence here of the little bit of market that is developed in the surplus lines area, which is extremely expensive, could dry up if we keep more onto it. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is for Representative Davids. Just a similar situation, you're saying, why shouldn't the contractor get the attorney's fees since as to who wins the suit? On the other hand, if the contractor sues on a mechanic's lien, they get attorney's fees if they win. The homeowner, if they defeat the mechanic's lien as fraud, they don't get it. So,
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Davids.
Representative Davids wants to insert that as an amendment in here, clearing that up.
Any further questions? We have some more testimony.
My name is Nancy Emerson, a homeowner. Actually, I'm a town homeowner, and I know exactly what you're talking about. In the Townhome Association under Makiowa, Minnesota Chapter 515B, which I unfortunately know more than I want to know about, we have specifically in Chapter, we have the 327A warranties, and we also have implied warranties and express warranties under the townhome law. And what that basically does is, once association is turned over, we have the ability to go after on our own with a new home construction using the Iowa law. In addition, the association has 6 years from the date the association is turned over to the homeowners to go after association problems. In other words, what they're responsible for in many associations and townhome associations. And this has been in effect since June of 1994. And basically what it says is if the association owns something in common, then they can go after the builder. It also gives the right for the individual to go after the builder. And I would like to read to you the actual, it says rights 515B dot 4-116, rights of action, attorney fees. In addition to any other rights to recover damages, attorney fees, costs, or expenses, whether authorized by this chapter or otherwise, if a declarant, builder, or any other person violates any provisions of this chapter or any provision of the declaration, bylaws, rules, and regulations, any person or class of persons adversely affected by the failure to comply, has a claim for appropriate relief. The association has standing to pursue claims on behalf of unit owners of two or more units. So it's an option. An individual can go at. The court may award a reasonable attorney fees and costs of litigation to the prevailing party. Punitive damages may be awarded for a willful failure to comply. And then it goes on. But it's very, very clear. And this has been into effect since June of 1994. And so basically in the townhome law, additionally it says these things can only be done if you own land and your association has property in common. So generally speaking, if you're attached in one way or another, you're covered under this. But single-family homes within a gated community, for example, or stuff, may not be. And basically, so what you're saying is that by not doing this amendment, in my mind, and this is my personal opinion, you're continuing to discriminate against people who are building single-family homes because attached homes are protected.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think the amendment, while well-meaning, I believe that, and I'll ask Ms. Perry Weaver to speak to this, but I believe this doesn't do anything. The judge already has the discretion to award at this point. And I would defer to Ms. Perry Weaver.
Ms. Perry Weaver.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think that in circumstances where Representative Goodwin is talking about the general liability insurance deep pocket, because I would agree with Representative Davids that most of the builders in Minnesota are building less than 10 homes a year, and I don't think that they would have deep pockets. General liability insurers are taking the position that attorney's fees are not considered property damage. And in circumstances where in negotiations they're trying to get attorney's fees for homeowners, the insurance company is not paying those attorney's fees because they don't consider it property damage under the general liability insurance policy. So this would directly impact the builder in this circumstance. The other issue, Representative Wilkin, to your point about the availability of general liability insurance in the surplus lines market, one of the primary areas of insurance that pays for these types of damages is called completed operations coverage for property damage. And when you purchase a policy in the surplus lines market, more often than not, the builders are buying an exclusion of completed operations coverage for property damage, so they have no property damage coverage. If you go to the Minnesota Department of Commerce and look at the deck pages that they submit with their license every year, you'll see that over half of them are without completed operations coverage, and that's happened in the last 3 or 4 years, which means that the deep pockets that the insurance companies and the attorneys and I think the homeowners and the builders have been depending on have disappeared because of the general liability insurance regular lines market going away. So I understand what Representative's trying to do, but I don't think it's going to solve the problem because the coverage has disappeared. Coverage even for regular property damage has disappeared. When you put a completed operations exclusion on for property damage, the moment the builder walks off that job site, they have no more GL coverage. So something to consider.
Any further questions? Representative Muller?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding would be that once the insurance company takes up the defense, which they have to tender the defense, that they, in my experience, end up paying they pay their own attorney's fees. So, and it's the insurance company that would be tendering the defense that would be protracting the litigation, probably. And I would guess that they would then have coverage on that.
Representative Muller, that's not our experience. The way the general liability insurance policy will pay for an attorney's fees awarded to a homeowner is through a property damage portion of their policy. And the insurance companies are saying that is not property damage. Attorney's fees for homeowners is not property damage. Yes, you're right. The general liability insurance company will pay for the builder's attorney's fees to participate in the suit, but not pay for damages awarded for the homeowner for attorney's fees. So,
Mr. Chairman, that's something we can easily fix by one sentence.
I'm sure Mr. Pender could write that. And the builders will have no more insurance.
Period. Especially if they're not getting completed operations anyway. I think we need to get to a vote here on this.
Just make one more comment?
Oh, please.
Again, Nancy Emerson, Mr. Chair. I think that possibly we might have lost sight of this. I appreciate all the talk about the insurance and this, between the builder and this and that. But basically, this is supposed to be a consumer protection bill. And what that means is a person should be able to walk into and buy a purchase a home. And according to the news reports recently, we have one of the worst closings. But having said that, we should be able to walk in, buy a home, if there's problems, get it fixed. And while I appreciate the builders having problems with the insurance companies and all this and that, that's just an excuse. This is a consumer protection bill. This is a bill for your constituents, for the residents other than the homeless that plan to buy homes. And while I appreciate it, that's not what it, you know, this amendment is to give single-family homes, people that buy single-family homes, the same protection as townhomes. And if builders are building with inadequate insurance and stuff, why is it the onus always on the homeowner or the potential buyer to have to take the burden up because all these issues are unresolved? This is a consumer protection bill. We shouldn't even have to know about this, quite frankly.
The clerk will take the roll.
Atkins? Clark? Davids?
No.
Fritz?
Yes.
Gazelka?
No.
Goodwin?
Yes.
Spencer?
No.
Hamilton?
No.
House?
No.
Yarrows?
Aye.
Coles? Liebling?
Yes.
Loeffler?
Yes.
Moe?
Yes.
Mallory?
Aye.
Pepin?
No.
Powell?
No.
Rukavina?
Yes.
Saylor?
Yes.
Sirdich?
Yes.
Severson?
No.
Simpson?
No.
Soderstrom? Vandeveer?
No.
Wilken?
No.
Sellers?
No.
Being 10 votes for and 12 against, the motion does not prevail. To the bill, Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move the language that Mr. Pender wrote.
Okay. Could
on line 1.7.
Let him the language, Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair, it's on line 1.7. Where it says and opportunity to, after the to insert offer to. The to is a TO, not a number.
Okay.
So it would read an opportunity to offer to repair.
So everybody have that amendment?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mueller moves that amendment. Representative Severson.
I would take that as a friendly amendment, Mr. Chair.
I think we still have to vote on it since it's the bill. So all in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. I believe that's it. So, I know. So the bill. It was where I was getting to. But Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, as I've been reading this during this lengthy discussion, I think there's just a little bit of confusion in the language on line 1.11 here, and that is the complete sentence reads, the applicable statute of limitations is told from the date the vendee's written notice is postmarked.
We'll, Representative Liebling? 1.11, okay, I'm sorry.
Okay. I think that the little phrase, the vendee's written notice, is confusing. I think what is meant there is the notice that is sent by the vendor. Am I correct on that, Mr.
I don't believe so.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no. In the Minnesota warranty statute, the vendee is the homeowner's written notice. And the homeowner is required in law to notify the builder in writing within 6 months of finding the defect. So there is no notice for the builder to respond at all. So this allows for the builder to respond back as a vendor. So I don't think that I think that's what that's trying to attempt to address.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative
Leibler. In that case, Mr. Chair, I think we still need to clarify. I mean, I kept reading this over and over and having trouble understanding whose notice this is because of the context. And so I guess I would move an oral amendment to change that to, instead of the vendee's written notice, I would say the notice sent by the vendee. It seems a small point, but it is confusing as it's written here. Because right. Then you get down to below and you have, on line 1.13, you're talking about the date the vendor gives written notice. So that's why it's confusing.
Okay.
Follow me.
So for members' clarification, Representative Liebling moves an oral amendment on line 1.11, deleting the words "the vendee's written notice," and insert the words "the notice sent by the vendee."
Yes.
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair, I suggest that the word "sent" be replaced with "provided" because the law doesn't require that it be mailed. It could be handed to the person.
Correct. That's fine.
Representative Liebling adopts that change. Representative Severson.
I have no problem with that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
Should the notice still be a written notice, Mr. Chair? That'd be my question to the...
Representative Liebling.
It's fine if that goes in. That's not the thing I have trouble with there. So it could be the written notice provided by the vendee. That would cover the whole thing. Thank you.
Okay, just to repeat
written
one,
notice.
One more time, as the amendment has been amended and amended again, now reads
the
written notice provided by the vendee.
Yes.
Everybody happy with that?
Yeah.
Any objections? Okay, Representative Liebling adopts the amendments to her amendment, to the Liebling amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Mm-hmm. Motion prevails. Mm-hmm. To the bill.
Mm-hmm.
All in favor of the House File 1375 as amended will be passed and re-referred to civil law. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're adjourned.